Welcome to another episode of Functional Fundamentals. This week we cover the dogmas of the fitness industry. We don't go in a lot of the dogmas, we just kind of attack a few. I think we end up getting three or four of them. We go in depth and we kind of show what we see in our dislikes and kind of the ways that need to change in this industry. And eventually we'll go into even more these issues to kind of cover them all, because this is a great industry that needs the change to kind of help the whole. So go ahead and get ready for our episode. And again, don't forget our sponsor, which is High Lead Apparel. Go ahead and visit that site and go get yourself 20% off. Now, let's play the music.
Here we are on episode 6 of Functional Fundamentals. Speaking, Dave Bray with your co-host, Michael Greenhouse. And today we're going to go over some dogmas of the health fitness industry, maybe a little bit of nutrition. We might save the nutrition stuff for next week when Brad is back in, because he's always fantastic to talk on that stuff. So fallacies, dogmas associated with the health and fitness industry. We all have our personal bias. There are good reasons we have our personal bias against certain things. But one thing that I think is interesting, and Mike, you can probably speak on it a little better than I could, as far as like when people say like, oh, I'm a certified trainer.
Okay. Yeah.
How many different certifications are there out there? And I know that a few of them, it takes what, like 3 days, like a weekend and $500, and all of a sudden you're certified?
Something like that, yeah. I mean, when people ask me about certifications, the biggest certifications I always try to push people towards are my main four, which is the NASM, which is the National American Medical Science. I believe that's how it's said. Don't quote me on all this, but NASM is a big one. It's actually very big in NBA. So the NBA has endorsed NASM. Then you have the National Strength and Conditioning Association, which is NSCA, and their CSCS, which is Certified Strength Conditioning Coach. That's kind of anybody that wants to work as a strength coach in any athletic field needs to have that. Then the other one I call it is the American Sports Medicine, or American Council of Sports Medicine, which is ACSM, which that is really kind of every textbook you get in school is controlled by them. So the four ones I kind of go for is the NASM, which is the NBA, and I believe they're also with the NHL now, but I know they're NBA. Mm-hmm. Then we have the NSCA and the CSCS, which is kind of anybody that wants to be a strength coach. And then we have the ACSM, which is all your textbooks. Those are the main four. Now, there is ACE, which is the American Council of Exercise. That was kind of the first one that came out when it came to personal training.
Gotcha.
But I think it's gotten so just liquefied and kind of cookie cutter and sent out there. And even some other programs I've seen, and I don't like to say this, but NASM, which I think I have a lot of respect for, now I'm seeing ads on TV for them talking about, hey, do our program. It only costs X amount. We'll get you a job. We'll get you in the personal training field, which is nice to see because NASM is a great program. But I remember when NASM was, you needed a college degree and a science diploma. You needed to go to an accredited university, and then you needed to take so many classes and take so many pre-tests, and then you had to go to a stationary testing center. You know, mm-hmm. Like when I had to do my testing for my strength and conditioning certification, I'd drive to Memphis to take it. There wasn't any in Columbus. Now they've changed it now, still the Strength and Conditioning Association, you have to go to a center. You can do it on a computer, but you have to go somewhere. You can't do it in the comfort of your own home. And that's where I kind of feel uncomfortable with having all these guys do certifications when they don't have to apply any practical knowledge. And I can sit there with my textbook open and answer these questions, which...
Oh, right.
At home. And that really doesn't teach you a whole lot. And Dave and I, we've discussed about starting, you know, the pure functional movements certification. And, you know, we're kind of working on tweaking some things, trying to figure out what criteria we need to focus on, nutrition, biomechanics, kinesiology, and movement pattern stuff. And we haven't really finished it yet. But the one thing we both agreed on is anybody that wants to become certified under Umbrella, it's a 6-month course, per se. I mean, you have to spend so many hours watching and teaching and instructing. And we've also agreed on how we're going to finish the certification would be you have to take someone through a full assessment, a biomechanical and movement assessment, figure out what their limitations are, fix their limitations, write a 6-week program, determine how to fix their limitations, and then train them twice to figure out if your ideals fit with their movement patterns. Yeah. Then once you've done that, then you can be certified under umbrella.
Yeah, and prove yourself through application.
Prove yourself for application.
And then we also, you have the standards.
Yes.
And I'm sorry, but if I go to somebody and I'm asking them to train me in anything and they are not physically in shape to keep it kind of nice, their credibility goes down the hole.
Exactly.
So you have those standards that, I personally believe that if you're certified, then you should be able to hit those standards.
Exactly.
You should be able to lead by example.
Well, exactly. The reason I like what I always tell you guys, my job is to get you out of that comfort zone and feel that suffering, the heart burning, the point where you want to quit but you don't. How much faith would you have in your strength coach if he's never suffered?
Right. Or if I ask you to show me something and you go, well, I can't really do that one because my body type is different from you. But so you're asking me to do something, but you can't show me how to do it?
Mm-hmm.
Sorry.
Right.
There are people that I've come across in different fields, just with martial arts, Muay Thai, Jiu-Jitsu, and stuff, that are teaching something, but they can't really do it themselves. And they just lose all credibility when that happens.
Yeah. So here, do a roundhouse kick, or do an uppercut, or a combination, and they can't do it. They're like,
yeah.
Huh. I remember when we used to train over, when we used to train together, I can't remember the gentleman's name, but he was worked for the Columbus Police Department.
Mm-hmm.
A little guy. And he would show us kicks, and I was like, pow, pow, pow. I'm thinking, ow. That would hurt so bad.
Dave Friedrich.
That was Dave. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah. And he...
He's awesome.
Yes. So anything that he teaches, it was a good thing. He would demonstrate.
Yes.
He wouldn't ask you to do something that he couldn't.
He would embarrass us.
Mm-hmm. And he actually teaches down at Grove City Jiu-Jitsu. They do Muay Thai there, Jiu-Jitsu, MMA. And he's affiliated, his jiu-jitsu program is affiliated under under Vitor Oliveira at Ronin. So maybe one day we can get David here to kind of speak on that, because I think it'd be interesting to, he has over, 17 years of experience just with martial arts, and he's done a bunch of different things, and obviously he has the police experience as well. And I'm really curious about something that jumps out at me, that all the police officers, when you talk about functional movements, they have a lot of gear.
Yes.
They wear a lot of stuff. And I'm sure that creates some sort of deficiencies. So I'd be really interested in speaking that.
Well, I worked with a few of the cops at the Whitehall Police Department down here, just local where we are. And the guy had, I think he said 26 pounds of gear.
Yeah. I asked a police officer friend of mine, and they said 30 pounds.
30 pounds. So, and he, in his posture, and he's an athletic guy, his posture was awful. Shoulders rolled forward, necks portrayed forward. He sits like
that.
Yeah. And if they walk, they're just doing a lot of things that are so wrong. And that kind of goes back to how, when we talk about picking a good trainer, and I use that word very, very loosely, because I don't believe anybody is good for you if they call themselves a personal trainer, because things have changed. You need a coach, you need a teacher, you need someone that's going to push you past those limits of your own comfort zone and make you strive to do something better. And that's what a teacher is in school. A teacher in school will push you past your limitations and make you a better academic, student.
Yeah, they're able to, because anybody can read from a textbook.
Right.
I want somebody that can bridge that gap between application and text. Lead me there.
And that's why we have these standards. And yeah, some of these standards, people might think, oh, well, why am I going to do something my trainer does when I want something different from my trainer or my coach in this speech? But the standards that we have, they're standards that every human should be able to do.
Yes.
It's taking our functional fundamentals and applying it to movement patterns with additional weight based on our own body. There's a standard.
Exactly, yeah. There's going to be a standard for me, and there's a standard for somebody who is 30 pounds lighter than me,
mm-hmm.
or different gender than I am.
Right.
So you have those. They're very adaptable
yes.
standards.
Like, example, the greatest one standard is is twice your body weight deadlift. Just do it one time. So for someone that weighs 200 pounds, they have to do it 400 pounds. For someone that weighs 150, they have to do 300. So there's the variation. It's not the same weight. It's the percentage of weight. Because to be honest, I care if you can deadlift 500 pounds or 600 pounds. If that's what you want to do, we can strive to that. But when it comes to my standard, I'm not really concerned because my ultimate job is to make you a better moving human, a more knowledgeable human mover, moving human. And then if you play a sport, your sport will excel because you can move better.
Yeah, I don't care if you can deadlift 500 pounds and you weigh 350. Doesn't matter to me. If you can deadlift 500 pounds and you weigh 150, though?
That's pretty impressive.
That's very impressive.
Yeah. But can you, okay, you can deadlift 500 pounds and you weigh 150. Can you run a mile in 7 minutes?
True.
Can you row 2,000 meters in 7 minutes or 1,000 meters in 330? Can you do other things? I'm not real interested in...
be a balanced human being.
Exactly. That's absolutely right. I'm not really interested in how much you can lift, but how much can you lift? How much can you run? How much can you sustain a certain movement over a course of a time period? I'm looking for a complete package. I'm looking for strength. I'm looking for endurance. I'm looking for power. All of it.
Yeah.
If you can't do it, then you're not moving well.
Take advantage of our biggest strength, humanity's biggest strength, and that's our adaptability. So, you know, we don't want to be just this single point, this spear. Mm-hmm. We have one strong point. We want to come out with multiple strong points.
Well, let's look into sports. Okay, if we're fighting or baseball or golf, how many times in these sports do you know exactly what you have to do? Where, and I'm in baseball, I throw a pitch. Okay, I know I don't have to go left, I don't have to go right, I just have to go forward. Okay, if I knew that in baseball I had to do one thing and one thing only, I wouldn't really worry about it.
That's all I'd work on, yeah.
Okay. If fighting, if I knew I had to do one thing and one thing only, I wouldn't work on anything else.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no reason for me to be able to run and lift well because my sport only asks for one thing. Golf is one of those fair things where, yeah, you're only doing one thing. Well, that's not really true because the funny thing about golf is each swing is slightly a little different because, again, I'm hitting a driver, but say I'm hitting a driver and I need to go over a bunker to the right. So if I'm a right-handed golfer, I need to hit a little bit of a cut. If I'm a left-handed golfer, I need to do a little bit of a draw. So my swing patterns will change.
And are you on level ground? Or are you on, like...
Right. So now I'm off the tee box. Now I'm hitting a ball, and I'm on a slight lie. So, again, I'm going to have to change my stance a little bit. So just by you changing your stance, you're changing your biomechanics. You're changing the firing of your muscles. So you need to be able to adapt to that movement to be able to perform the activity without injury. And that's why I have golfers, baseball players, and fighters all are in that little realm of my standards. And then I take my non-athletes, which I believe everyone I train is an athlete. It's just I put you in the elite athlete category or athlete category depending on if you play every day or not.
Yeah.
But the people that don't have competitions every week, they're on the same list of those standards because who knows if they're walking down the street and they come off the curb wrong. Or maybe someone runs a red light and they gotta jump out of the street.
Depending on how they have to react to any given situation.
They have to care, they have to go help somebody move.
Mm-hmm.
Stuff like that.
Yeah, because
you get chased by a dog.
Yeah.
God forbid.
Unfortunately.
Mm-hmm. But you have all these little things. We never know how the body's gonna be.
So you might as well be prepared for every situation that you can.
Exactly. I mean look at the animal kingdom. Mm-hmm. Do you think those animals get up every day and the hyenas stretch? Like, okay, I'm going to go run after some lions today, go steal some food. I got to make sure, you know, the hippos don't get me today.
Right.
No, they wake up, they go through their day. They're expecting everything to happen. And for that to be, they have to make sure that their body's ideal positions to do everything.
They move to the best of their ability.
They move to the best
of their ability. And as we've gotten away from that. Human beings have gotten away from that.
You don't see hyenas sitting or lions sitting. We sit all day long because we feel it's like, well, it's easy to do. Well, yeah, it's easy to do, but that's not a natural position to be in.
Right. It's not good.
It's not good at all. So there's our first tangent today on the dogmas of fitness. So the first thing we tackled was the amount of certifications that are out there.
Yeah, there's just...
So when
seems
you go,
like there's so many
tons
there right now.
You go online right now and you type in personal training certifications, strength coach certifications. You'll see a laundry list of them.
It's like is there one that's more common than the other? Like as far as like if I want to go and be a personal trainer at a big gym.
Say Lifetime Fitness.
Lifetime, Urban Active, Lifetime Fitness. Like Do they have their own certifications there?
Some of them do. I believe Lifetime, they're ones that they have an agreement with NASM. So if you work there, you have to get a NASM.
Okay.
And like I said, NASM was very good. And it's not bad. Don't get me wrong. It's not a bad certification. If you're going to get one, that is one you should get. But they're becoming more marketable.
Because I imagine they're trying to make money. More profitable.
They're trying to make money.
And sometimes, when you want to be more profitable, you have to. There's certain decisions that have to be made.
Yes.
From a business mindset, and maybe you end up being quote unquote watered down because of that, because you want to appeal to a larger audience.
Yeah.
But and that's, we've talked on that before, like striking that balance. And I mean, I'm sure it's rough. But
one thing I've heard, and some of you, if you're listening to this, you may have heard the gentleman's name. His name's Thomas Plummer. He's a big fitness consultant. He's been in the fitness industry for years. And one of his big things he always tells people, and I had an opportunity to listen to him speak, is do not be generalized. Don't work for everybody. Have a niche. Have a specialty. You know, mm-hmm. I'm not saying be a guru, because I think that word's overused.
Yeah.
But for me, my niche or my specialty, I say, is human movement. I don't work well for everybody, because one of the things I've told Dave and I've told Brad and I've told all my athletes, if you don't give me everything you have, don't show up tomorrow. I'm not here to hold your hand. I'm here to get you out of comfort zone and make you a better human. Plain and simple. That's my job. I'm not here to make you lose 5 pounds. I'm here to make you a better working human. So if your scale goes up, but you're moving better, your clothes fit better, that's all I care about.
Yeah.
I don't weigh my people because I don't really care how much they weigh. If they move well, that's all I care about. Because if I'm working with a fighter, my job is to make sure they move as best of their ability. Their striking coach and their jiu-jitsu coach or their ring or their corners,
their dietitian,
that's their job to make sure they can make the weight.
Yeah.
My job is to make sure they move well.
Mm-hmm.
And some people always say, why don't you weigh anybody? Why don't you do measurements? Because my job is not to make sure you fit in some dress or fit in a bathing suit well. My job is to make sure you move functionally well.
Just because you're skinny doesn't mean you move well or you're functional.
Right.
Or you're healthy, for that means. Just means you weigh less than somebody.
Exactly.
So stop tying weight. And that's a fallacy. Right?
That is. Weight doesn't mean you're healthy.
No.
If you're overweight, okay, that's one thing. If your BMI is high, that's one thing. Okay, my BMI, I think I weigh a little 185. My body fat is about 10%, but my BMI is like 28. So
according to that BMI scale, you are overweight.
I'm overweight.
Mm-hmm.
But my clothes are smaller than they've. I'm fitting well in my clothes. I actually, it kind of stinks because now my belts fit anymore. I feel like I'm
right.
A homeless guy because I'm like choinking all my jeans together. But that has something to do with because my thighs are big, so I have to get bigger.
Right? Yeah. I run into that problem too.
Yeah, you have to get bigger pants so your mm-hmm. thighs can fit over. It's quite annoying. But what are you going to do when you're special like us?
Super special.
But yeah. And that's the thing is, people are so focused on looking at these magazines and these women say, well, I weigh 110 pounds, or I weigh 115 pounds. But how do you move?
Yeah.
Do you move?
How do you feel every day?
How do you feel?
Are you lightheaded when you stand up every single time?
Yeah.
Might be an indicator that you're under eating.
Exactly.
Might be an indicator. Doesn't mean that every single person who weighs 110 pounds is under eating.
Right.
If you're 5'1" and you weigh 110 pounds, maybe that's perfect for your body.
Well, here's a funny story. I'm working with a woman. She's getting married.
I opened up a pistachio and nothing was in the shell. I got upset. Anyway.
That's kind of funny, though. I'm working with this young lady. She's getting ready for her wedding. And I'm going to leave the names out because she does listen to this. But her weight is not moving as well as she would like. But she's had her dress altered 3 or 4 times. She's getting smaller. She's getting curvy. She's looking good. But her weight's not moving the way she wants to work. And I had to sit down with her and say, don't worry about your weight. How do you look and feel in your clothes? She says, I feel good. I look great.
That's it.
And a lot of it has to do is because we're building definition in certain areas. But the one thing we worked on was her posture. We had to fix certain things. We had to build up different muscles to kind of help with her posture, which is increasing her weight. But she's actually looking and feeling better. She's not her ideal weight she wants to be, but things are going where she wants. She's looking the way she wants.
Yeah, because I imagine she was deficient in those areas that you're trying to build up the muscle.
Yes.
Well, I mean, when you're adding muscle, you're going to gain a little bit of weight. But if she's waking up pain-free, moving well, feeling good, that's fantastic.
And that's the goal. And that's the goal we're trying to push.
Because I don't want to okay, I've cut weight for fights, and I've had to make weight. Oh, man, like, I fought at 145, and yeah, I weighed 145. I was super skinny. How did I feel? I felt like crap. And it's not like I looked good. I was emaciated, just malnourished at the time, cheeks all sunken. So
yeah.
I would trade feeling good, looking good, moving well over that any day.
Yes, it's not about having the six pack. It's not having the rippling shoulders and the rippling abs. It's how do you move? Can you do certain movements that the human body's meant to do? Can you crawl? Can you jump? Can you climb? Can you tackle? Can
Stop
you do these little things?
Yourself to everybody else.
Right. Think about how do you move? Do you move well without pain? And that's their ultimate goal. So my job is to make sure I can take every athlete, doesn't matter if you're in a sport or not, every time you work with me, you're an athlete, because I push you past that limit and make you a better working human. That is my job. Because my belief, if you move as a better human, everything you do will become easier and more efficient.
Yes.
And that's the goal. My goal is not to make you lose 10 pounds. Yes, if you work with me, you will probably lose weight.
Yeah.
You will tone up. You will look better because I'm doing things to you.
They're just byproducts.
They're byproducts.
They're not the goal. The goal is, like you said, move well, feel good.
That is the goal. And then the byproduct is looking good.
Yeah.
And that's the truth.
I mean, that'll come.
That will come. I mean, some of the stuff we do, you feel like you're going to die. But the point of it is...
I can attest to that today.
Yes, you can attest to that today. So you feel like that you're going to just, your heart's going to explode, your legs are going to seize up, and you're just going to pass out and die. That's kind of where I push people to, because once they get to that point and they've succeeded, mentally they're stronger. And physically, I can go further next time.
Like today, that last set on
yes.
the rower, where, I mean, you were pushing me, and I was working hard, and I just had my freaking eyes closed at the time because I didn't want to look how much time was left or anything. So, but then I look up, and I hit the mark.
Yes.
And I was surprised. You saw me. I just kind of stared at it for a second.
No, I'm done?
I was like, really? That was... I did the entire length. Like, you're not lying to me? You didn't cut me a break? Absolutely not. I just managed to do it. So next time, maybe instead of hitting one of the four sets I did, I can hit two of the four sets, mm-hmm. or three of the four sets, and then eventually hit all four of those sets on time. And my punishment won't be as bad.
No, punishment won't be bad. But just think about it. From the first time we had our first, you know, gut buster workout to today...
Oh, right.
Your recovery time has been so much better. Your strength has gotten better.
I feel good. Just doing, like, the bear crawls.
Yes.
When we go around the track. How many times I had to stop the first time.
Right.
Today, once.
Yeah. And, I mean, those little things we pick up, like, wow, I feel better. And then all of a sudden, like, wow, I'm starting to look good. My clothes are fitting good.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not like we're really changing anything. We're just making our bodies work harder. That's all we're kind of doing. And that's what we try to do. And, again, when you guys are looking for a trainer that says he has all these say he has like 7 certifications. That's great. I'm glad he had a lot of money and a lot of time to take tests.
Awesome.
Good for him. But can he apply it? Can he look at you and say, I have a plan for you. This is my goal for you.
Mm-hmm.
But think about it. Look how he trains his people. Does he train everybody a little bit the same? Which is okay. If the plan, if his ideals are all kind of walking into place.
Yeah.
But if he trains one person for this, one person for that, one person for that. So he's saying he's doing 7 different kind of avenues of training. Do you really want someone that's okay at a lot? Or do you want to work with somebody that's great at one thing? And again, this is my opinion. I want to be good at one thing. And my thing is I want to make people move better. And I want to push them as hard as I can. And that's what I'm good at.
Yeah, and you can apply that to every single person that comes in your door.
Yes.
If you're good, if you're okay at these 5 different things, then you can kind of apply those, like, you're mediocre as far as the application.
Mm-hmm.
You may not be able to apply all 5 of those things to 10 different people that walk through the door.
Yeah.
You'd be like, oh, well, I'm going to use this for you, even though that's not necessarily what they came here for.
Yeah, that's...
Whereas when you specialize... You can take that and you can apply it to every single person that walks through the door. And that's it. The more you know about something, the more adaptable you're able to make it.
Exactly. I mean, in other words, when it comes to what he was trying to say is I can adapt certain things. I'm not good for a bodybuilder. I'm not good for a female fitness competitor. I'm not good for a woman that wants to lose 5 pounds. I'm not good for a guy that wants to have bigger chest and bigger shoulders and, you know, this kind of stuff. That's
he can read Men's Fitness for that.
Yeah, he can read Men's Fitness for that. That's not what I'm here for. I'm here, again, to make you move better. So if you want to live without pain and you want to move more efficiently, and the byproduct of doing those two things, getting out of your comfort zone, will be a better looking body. You'll be feeling good, looking good. All those good things will come from it. That's what I do. But if you're looking for a bodybuilder, I'm sorry, I'm not that kind of person. I'm not here to help you lose 5 pounds by the end of the week. That's not what I do.
Not looking for those gains, brah.
No, I'm not a gain brah. If you say brah to me, I'll make you run and move harder so you'll never say that again. There's a few things we do with me. One is never take the Lord's name in vain. Never say brah. And those are basically it.
Just a couple.
Those are the two things. Don't say those two things and we're good to go. If you want to cuss up a storm or throw up everywhere, that's fine. That means you're working hard. But just don't call me bro.
Nope.
Or Cool Beans. Don't say that one either.
Cool Beans. Oh my.
I will bury you.
I'll just stick with okay.
I'll just make you do 6 biathlons, 5x5s.
Oh my god.
Something's going to happen. You're going to throw up or your heart's going to explode. More than 2.
Yeah. Maybe both.
Maybe both. So we've tackled 2 of our fallacies or our dogmas, which is not every certification is ideal. Not every trainer is ideal. You got to be smart in how you choose them. And then the other one was weight doesn't mean you're healthy or unhealthy for that matter.
Right.
Don't focus so much on the scale. Focus on how you feel, how you move, and how you look.
Yeah. Stop tying everything to numbers. Yeah. And that's and to take it a step further, we're talking about weight as in your body weight, as well as like weight that you're lifting. You gotta put it in perspective. Like we were talking about the standards. Just because you're lifting 500 pounds does not mean you're the strongest guy in the world, especially if you weigh 450 pounds.
Right.
So you have to put everything in perspective.
It's a coordination of how much you weigh to how much you move. It's always a percentage based on that. Mm-hmm. And that's why all the standards are based, a lot of the lifting standards are based upon your weight. And females are the same thing. We have a female standard for a deadlift is 1.5 their body weight. So 120 pound woman, okay, she'd have to deadlift 300 pounds. 280. No, it'd be 300 pounds. She'd have to lift 300 pounds one time.
Oh, right. Yeah.
100 pounds. So, I mean, it's all based upon that. I mean, so you got to take it with a grain of salt when it comes to how much you lift. It's how much you lift according to your weight, but can you do other things?
Yeah. Can you lift? Can you run? Is your muscle endurance there? Everything.
And so moving on with a little transition, moving on to our next dogma, is one of the standards we do not have on our standard list to become either a certified trainer through us or a certified coach through us or just an athlete in general is crunches. We don't have crunches. That is not one of our standards.
Wait, you mean I can get washboard abs by doing crunches?
Ding, ding, ding. There's our dogma. Everybody thinks, oh, I do 200 crunches a day. I do 1,000 crunches a day. I mean, I saw a post.
I bet you look like Quasimodo a little bit, hunched over.
Yep.
If you're doing that many crunches a day.
Oh, well, the worst was I read an article, that new movie coming up called Southpaw with Jason Gyllenhaal, who's the boxer.
Oh, right, yeah.
I can't remember the website. It might have been MSNBC or Fox or Huntington Post, one of those two. It's kind of, not to kind of inflate those websites, but I think it was one of those things. Said that Gyllenhaal got the stomach he received by doing 1,000 crunches a day. And I read that, I'm thinking, oh my goodness.
How many people are going out there and doing 1,000
crunches a day?
Messing up their neck, messing up their back.
And it's, yeah, he may have done 1,000 crunches a day, which I think is stupid. But he also had a strength coach, he had a boxing coach, he had a nutritionist, he had a physical therapist, and he had a massage therapist working with him every day. That's how I get the 6-pack. Not because I did 1,000 crunches a day.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I see boxers, you know, when they always, you know, getting ready for those spikes, you see them on TV, you know, the inside corner or the all access or behind the scenes. They see them working out. They're always doing crunches. They're always doing crunches. And I think it's more of just, it's something we've always done. Let's just keep doing it.
Yeah.
It's all we've done. We've always done. Why not do a plank? Because again, the idea of a plank is it locks the spine in place and it allows the muscles to work around the torso to stabilize the spine, so it builds stability. When we stand, that's basically a plank because we're building stability in the spine and the muscles around it.
Yes. If you're standing properly, your abs and your core should be engaged.
Yes. Standing up tall, shoulders back, core tight, belly in. Now, I always told Dave, this is my way to determine if the exercise you're doing is worthless or a function. Best way to determine. If you do it, say, in a seated position, so let's take the plank in a seated position, on our forearms or straight arm, doesn't really matter. Our torso is straight. We can draw a straight line from our ankle to our knee to our hip to our shoulders, nice straight little platform. We should be able to hold a PCP on our back and order a glass of water. It doesn't really matter.
Kind of like we were showing on the video, the push-up.
Yes, the perfect push-up.
Just look at,
plank.
You know, when he's upright, and his forearm and his arms are straight. That's the plank.
That's the plank.
That's a version of the plank.
Right. And I'll post that. I'll post it in the show notes. So then let's take that same position and stand up and just put our arms out. Okay, this is a position we get in, I don't know how many times a day, or if our arms are bent, but we're in that position naturally.
Yeah, you're reaching for something.
Reaching for something, we're in that position. Mm-hmm. So we could go to the ground, it looks okay, we stand up, it looks fine. Right? Now let's take a crunch. We're on our back. And we're crunching, so we're rolling up our spine, kind of like an inch, like not an inch from, but like a, one of those little guys.
Potato bug?
The potato bug, yeah. We're rolling ourselves in like a little potato bug.
I forget what they're actually called. I call them potato bugs.
They're potato bugs. Everybody, I think everybody knows what they are. You get the
bug. Some people call them pill bugs.
Pill bugs?
Mm-hmm.
But guys that roll up, they're like tiny, they're like, what are they, all those, the big guys that play dead, possums. Or no.
Armadillos?
Armadillos. They're like tiny armadillos.
They're bug armadillos.
They're bugs.
That's the new name. They're bug armadillos.
Bug armadillos. Now. We can call them mini-mes. Like mini armadillos.
Yeah.
Or bug armadillos.
Bugadillos.
Nailed it. Bugadillos.
Nobody steal that from us. I will come find you.
So you look like a bugadillo. So you're slight on the ground, you're crunching, you're bringing your head, you're rounding your neck, and you get that big old kind of stegosaurus spine kind of pushing through your back.
Yeah.
Okay, now stand up and do that same motion. It looks like, I don't know what it looks like. It's like you're trying to kiss your belly button.
Like over and over again.
Yeah. Or you're trying to bow down to somebody, but you're not doing it right.
Hey, if you look at a proper bow, your back straight.
But your this is going down for
yeah, if you're
your
rolling over
is,
your neck, if you're rolling your spine, rolling your neck, that's not good.
Well, do it quickly. You'll get a headache.
Yeah.
You just go up and down real quick. You're going to get real dizzy.
Mm-hmm. So it looks dumb standing up.
Right. So now some people are like, well, what about leg lifts? Ah, okay, let's do leg lifts. So we do leg lifts. Okay, we do flutter kicks more so than anything else.
Mm-hmm.
We don't really do a lot of a leg lift because most people can't do it correctly because they don't have a strong enough spine.
They swing their lower back.
They swing the lower back. So we have a little test where normally we do is you have to hold a plank, or not a plank, but a 6-inch hold for about a minute and a half to 2 minutes before I allow you to do a really proper leg lift, because if you don't get full range of motion, it kind of defeats the purpose. But a flutter kick, okay? So if anyone's ever seen any Navy SEAL or military video, a flutter kick is you're on your back, your feet are about a foot off the ground, and you're kicking your feet like you're in the water.
Yeah.
Essentially, that's your gun. So, let's stand, and let's move our feet back and forth like we're fluttering. What are we doing? Oh, look, we're walking. See how it kind of goes with each other?
Yeah, and flutter kick, your core's engaged. You're just kicking a little bit.
You're just kicking a little bit, which would be the same thing as marching or walking in place.
Yep.
Or not in place, but
core should be engaged. So, it looks basically the same standing up and sitting on the ground.
Mm-hmm. And then the main reason they developed that workout was to get people to be able to move their legs very efficiently in the water for hours at a time. So you throw yourselves in the water, you flutter away, that's the
right.
Same movement. It's building the same muscles.
Tread water.
It's treading water, basically, or for propelling ourselves through the water. So those are two good core exercises, the plank and the flutter kicks, and they look functional standing up. They don't look like, you don't look like an idiot. Crunches will not give you a six pack. Eating will give you that six pack.
Running.
I mean, but I always tell guys, and I've met a lot of guys that say they have strong abdomens. Oh, I have a strong core. I have a six pack. I have strong abs. And when people say I have a core and abs, I just want to smack them because they really don't know what that is.
They'll have a six pack. They'll be great. I said, okay, give me a 2 minute perfect plank. If you can give me 2 minutes of a perfect plank without moving, that is an indication you have a strong core. If you can't do that, regardless of how your core looks, say you have additional weight over your belly so you don't see the ripples in your stomach. If it's there, it's surrounded by fat, but you can give me a 2 minute plank, you have a strong core.
Yeah.
I don't care what it looks like.
Your core is not just your abdomen.
No. We have the obliques, the internal obliques, the rectus spinae, even some of your hip flexors and your glute muscles are considered part of the core because it's, some people feel like it's a little below the hip. They think it's kind of the groin up is your core because it all helps stabilize. So if you can do that 2 minute plank, you have a strong abdomen. And when an indication of your strong abdomen, you're going to have your back smooth protected.
Yes.
And you'd be able to do that squat a little
bit
more.
If your back hurts, if your lower back hurts after a plank, or your back hurts after you're doing push-ups, you probably don't have as strong of a core as you thought you did. Mm-hmm. You're letting it sag just a little bit, and it's putting pressure on your lower spine, causing it to ache afterwards.
Which is not a bad thing, it just needs to be fixed.
Yes. Nice. It's an easy fix, actually.
It is an easy fix.
Stop trying to do 100 incorrect push-ups and just give us 25 correct ones.
It's not hard, it's just you have to put a little time into it. And a lot of it is that, again, you have to point the finger at yourself and say, I'm not good at this. Let's figure it out.
Yeah, exactly.
Because you're a human. Again, unless you had a catastrophic injury, you should be able to move well. And we can teach you how to move well. It's just going to take some time and patience, depending on how bad you move.
Yeah.
But we can make it work.
With pull-ups. When you saw me first doing pull-ups, could not do that many. We're not going to say the number, but we know it's low.
And now you can do a fair amount that pass for a pull-up.
Yeah. You can do the burpee pull-ups for a while.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, you can hammer those things out quite well. All right, so that was our big one, which I wanted to cover, because so many people, that's all they do is crunches and crunches and crunches. And I'm like, you look like an idiot.
Yeah, stop doing crunches. You're not going to get rid of your belly fat by doing crunches. You don't even, I mean, you don't break a sweat, really, enough, really, to do when you're doing crunches. You're going to tire your back out. You're going to tire your neck out, which is just terrible. You're exposing your spine.
And then that's when you get your guillotine.
Yep. That's what happens. You saw.
Well, let's go on the fact that what is the core's job? It's to create stability of the spine and structural of the torso. Okay, that's its job. It's kind of hold up our head. That's kind of our point.
It's all about stability right there.
And it helps with rotation of the hip and shoulders.
Yes.
So if we really want to change the abdomen, is we use it in a functional way, which would be stability, so the plank. And then it also helps with hip movement for some people that believe the core drops below the waistline, so that's our flutter kicks, because it helps with hip movement. And rotation, so you have your Russian twists, you have your med ball throws, your rotational med ball throws, stuff like that. That's actually teaching the abdomen to work in its functional atmosphere. Similar to the reason why we do, you know, sprints and clean and stuff like that. So a football player doing a clean, it's helping him to shoot that shoulder up underneath, similar to a lineman pushing through the line.
Yeah.
Doing movements like that. You know, walking lunges are a great movement for any kind of wrestler or guy that's a fighter, because it teaches him to kind of lunge forward. And a pitcher, same thing. It teaches him to kind of push through the pitch because he's in that lunge position. So we have all these little things that kind of mimic the movement, but not only the mimicking the movements that portray to sport, but doing athletic training movements or just exercises, period, that mimic the movement of the body. So doing a curl, the reason we do a curl, bring the weight up, because that's the pattern of the muscle. Our bicep goes across to the elbow, we bend the elbow, the bicep gets big, the tricep lengthens. That's the natural movement of the muscle. So we do those primarily, okay? I'm not asking you to grab a weight and make your arm move really fast left or right, because that's not the movement of the bicep.
Shake weight.
Shake weight, oh, there you go. But why do we do crunches when technically doing that crunch movement is not necessarily the primary movement of the abdomen?
Yeah.
We can do a little movement.
You're forcing everything to
Now, pull we can forward. We can do that little movement. Like, we do one exercise where we lay on our back and basically just bring our shoulders up off the ground. So our shoulder blades are off the ground. Okay? That's a natural movement, because if we take a step forward, our shoulder blades will come forward a little bit. But we never let our shoulders go past our hips. That's not good, because once our shoulders comes past our hip, we get the Quasimodo spot.
Yeah, you see, I mean, you see some older individuals, as they progress in age,
they shrink.
They start to shrink, and it's not, I mean, yes, your spine does strength. You are technically taller in the morning when you wake up than when you go to bed because you're walking around because of compression. And of course, years and years of that, it's gonna do it a little bit. But a lot of these people, they look like they're shorter because they start leaning forward.
It's very dominant now.
Yeah. And that's kind of like you're promoting that when you are doing a lot of crunches. You're gonna sit there with your shoulders rolled forward and everything just kind of pulling you.
No, it doesn't look good. And if I told
CJ.
Yeah.
He was in here talking about Ronan. I forget what episode. Episode 3?
Two. Episode 3. Combat athletes.
But he was in there talking about the combat athletes. He was one where when Mike did the assessment, he noticed his shoulders were rolled forward. We were asking, like, hey, how many crunches are you doing throughout the day? And it turned out he was doing crunches all the time.
Like 200 to 500 a day.
But he wasn't doing the opposite movement to rehab that, mm-hmm. or to prehab it beforehand. So it's just like if you sit there and you do curls all day with your bicep and you don't work on your tricep, your arm is going to look deformed. Mm-hmm. And a deformity is when look at like the past Mr. Olympias. Mr. Universe, Mr. Olympia.
Yeah, they're all kind of the same criteria.
Yeah, but it's all about that symmetry, mm-hmm. of the muscles.
They work both sides and they work it well.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the whole idea. Now, I'm not a big component of bodybuilding, but those guys, they do isometry. They do both sides. And a lot of it is, you know, when we train, we typically do 3-to-2 ratio front to back. And the reason we do that is because of the muscles. There's three times as many muscles. For every two muscles that are in the chest, there's three in the back. So there's more muscles in our posterior system to hold us upright.
Yeah.
We need that. But we never work on that. We do crunches. But how many?
We work on what we can see in the mirror.
Yep. Most people can't see our backs, so we work on our chests and work on our abdomen and our biceps. So that's kind of the end of that particular dogma. Is the crunch is not that great. So find some different exercises. You know, doing the ab roll correctly is a good one. Flutter kicks is a great one, and the plank. Those three, that's pretty much all you need to really target the abdomen. And if you don't feel like that's good enough, do a front squat. Front squats are some of the best things you can do for your abdomen.
Because that's stuff to work on your core, work on your abdomen. We're not talking about getting rid of the fat on top of your abdomen.
That has to be done by the diet.
Yeah, diet, go run, cycle.
Burn those extra calories. And a lot of it is eat well.
Create a calorie deficit. Mm-hmm. Now get rid of the extra fat.
Yes. And which what Brad talked about earlier is he's not big into those superfoods. So we're not going to go too much in dogmas of nutrition. But we'll leave that to him since he's the brain.
Yeah, that's his expertise.
So we covered the three kind of big ones that I wanted to cover. So, Dave, what's some of the biggest dogmas you see in the fitness and health industry? Or just say athletics and all together and how people train.
Stretching.
Let's tackle that one.
It's so frustrating.
That's right. You've been telling me, give a little background. This is every week I get like a text from Dave talking about
me going on my rants.
On his little rants. Tell us about the last rant you had.
The last one?
About how now they're implementing a stretching protocol at your work.
Yeah, so, and this is, a couple people at work actually listen, so.
Hope this doesn't point anybody out.
Right. When you implement a stretching protocol, because the first thing you ask is.
Breathe,
you're
getting a little excited.
Right. Go to your SMART goals. Why are you doing something? It needs to be a SMART. Specific, measurable, attainable, realistic, and timely. A lot of workplaces are becoming more aware of, they want to be more ergonomically friendly because they realize that sitting in an office for 8 hours a day, 9 hours a day, is not good for somebody when they're just sitting on the chair. So they've implemented things such as stand-up desks or reimbursement programs if you go and you join a gym, stuff like that. And then some facilities will have places where you can go and stretch. And that's kind of where I I'm just against it. Because the purpose of a lot of these programs is to re-energize the employees so that they can go through the rest of their day. Stretching to stretch doesn't do that. We talked about that. Mm-hmm. Same thing with when you talk about stretching versus mobility. When you stretch, when you do a static stretch, you're creating tiny rips in your muscle fibers. The next thing your body does is send blood to that area and say, it's time to rest and recover. So your mindset is, hey, I'm gonna stretch to get energy. But you're doing exactly the opposite. You're doing something that you should be doing in the evening before you rest.
Do something to deregulate it, yeah.
Yes. So, and that's, I just, and you were able to, it's great because when I came to you and we talked about stretching versus mobility, I was right there with you because it all just made so much sense based on my experience at the time. If you want to create energy, if you want to promote energy, get the energy back, do mobility exercises. And there's plenty that you can do in an office environment as well. Test your mobility. Just get up and move around. More importantly, if you simply go and you stretch 1, 2, 3 times a day, that is not going to undo 8 hours of incorrect posture, incorrect movement. Just those 15 minutes total a day, 5 minutes spread over 3 times, is not going to undo that. So I think it's more important to promote education and really explain why you're doing certain movements. Do those mobility exercises. Be more conscious when you're sitting there, when you're sitting in the chair. Are you slouched over? Are your shoulders forward? If so, fix it. Think regal. Be proud of yourself. You want to be in a regal position all the time. Chest out, shoulders back, core tight. Whether you're sitting, standing, walking, running.
Absolutely. I mean, we've talked about before on how many hours are in a day you're sitting or in a rest position. We turned out to be like 16 hours a day.
Yeah.
And that's going to overwhelm doing the things correctly.
Yeah. And if I lean down and touch my toes a couple times a day, that's not undoing all that.
Well, one thing I always tell people is, say you can't, you stretch, right? Then you relax and you stretch again, you relax, stretch again. Every time you do that same stretch, you should get a little bit further each time.
Should, yes.
If you don't, then you have a tight muscle. So it's a knot, muscle knot for some people. That can't be fixed by stretching. You have to get in there and break up that soft tissue. So doing a myofascial release, rolling around on a ball, using a foam roller, using one of those, any kind of myofascia tools to kind of break up that tissue.
Lacrosse balls.
Yeah, but they have these little metal things that you can get in there as well.
Mm-hmm.
You have to use that. And what that will do, that will lengthen the muscle tissue, reduce the soft tissue you have in, the soft tissue injury you have in the muscle, and allow length and mobility to increase. You nailed it. Just stretching alone really doesn't do anything. I mean, we've talked about those reports we've seen that yogaists, or however you want to call them, that do 3 or 4 days a week of yoga are getting a high number of ruptured discs in their spine.
Right.
Because mm-hmm. they're very, very flexible, but they have no stability and mobility.
Yes.
So it's one thing to stretch, but you can be stretched too far.
Yes.
Because one thing when we do is when we talk about stretching, which I don't like to use that word stretching. I say rehab, mobility work, dynamic, cool down, dynamic warm up. That's my ideal of stretching. You want to be able to move in a pattern that your body's able to do efficiently.
Naturally.
But you do not want to lose tension in the joint. And what I mean by tension in the joint is you don't want to have a loose joint. Like your joint, you don't want to feel like your joints are out of out of the socket or dislocated or just loose in general. You want some tension.
Yeah, because they're protecting themselves.
Right. And another reason we want tension is if I'm going to run real quick unexpectedly. Okay, I'm going to have to drive my foot into the ground and produce that ground force production. And if I don't have any tension in my hip, I have a loose hip, I'm going to pull something.
Yep.
I'm going to pull a hamstring, I'm going to pull a groin, pull a back muscle, who knows? But that's why if you're too flexible, it's not a good thing. Because flexibility can take you to the point where we lose tension in the joint. Now, mobility is the ability to allow the joint to move through a complete range of motion and allow the body to act with the rest of the joints. So if we have good mobility in our ankle, we can go up to our knee, to our hips, and now we can perform a good squat. Mm-hmm. If we have good mobility in our shoulder, we can then throw a baseball efficiently because now we can bend the elbow, bend the wrist. We can swing a golf club efficiently because we're getting rotation in the shoulder, to the elbow, and the wrist. So that's how I look at mobility. But you can't swing a golf club, throw a punch, run, or squat without good tension in the hip or the shoulder or the elbow. We need that. It's very hard to kind of explain. You kind of need that.
If you've ever had a knee injury, like say someone has torn an ACL or MCL, the first thing you know is that it feels very loose. And you're like, I don't feel good. I don't feel stable.
Yeah.
So then, you know, and then maybe the doctor have you wear a sleeve until you're going in for like a more permanent fix. But that's a big sign right there, is when you don't have tension, it feels loose, it's not stable. The joints aren't able to stabilize.
Well, that's why we work out. I mean, a good example. For someone that has arthritis, one of the protocols to arthritis is, drinking lots of liquid. You want to stay hydrated. But say I have arthritis in my kneecap, okay?
So one of the protocols to help reduce pain in that arthritic area is to build the strength of the muscles below and above and below the joint. So if I'm having knee pain, I need to strengthen my quadricep, my hamstring, my tibialis anterior, my soleus, my gastro. So it's all the muscles above and below that joint. What that will do, that will build better tension and stability in that knee joint. So when I move, I'm not getting that grind. It's not going to grind as much. Yes, it's still going to hurt a little bit, but it's going to reduce the pain. And I'll be able to move more. I'll be able to move more frequently. It will take me less time for the reduction of the pain go away when I start moving.
Mm-hmm.
So all it is, we're building up the structure around that joint to build tension. So we feel stern, we feel stable. I mean, suddenly it's like walking on a bridge. Do you want to walk on a bridge that's loose, that sways, and that has missing planks? That's not very stable. It's very, very loose.
Scary.
It's loose, but it's not stable. Or do you want to walk on a bridge that is solid? Doesn't move very well, but it's very stern. It has a lot of tension. You can see everything working well.
Mm-hmm.
It's a tight bridge. But so you can kind of see the difference we're talking about. Loose is good in some areas, but when it comes to as a structure for the human body, loose has its limitations. We want some tension.
Yes.
And that's why flexibility, people try to use that so much. Like, oh, let's do yoga, let's do Pilates, let's do this, let's stretch. Stretching is good. It makes us feel good. And that's why I always tell these guys to do their rehab at night, which is a simple protocol of the daily hacks and some, you can call it stretching. I call it mobility work. And it deregulates the body.
Yeah, stretching has its place.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not, I personally believe it's not before the workout. And it's not something that promotes energy. Like you said, it deregulates the body.
Yes.
You prep it for rest. If you have trouble sleeping, do some stretches. That's the perfect time to do stretches.
Yeah.
Midday, try to get energy? No.
Get
out and walk around. Just be active.
Yes.
That will give you a better bolt of energy than sitting there and doing wrist stretches.
Yeah. Stuff like that. That's just kind of, people think they're doing good. And they're really not. You're more wasting time than anything else. Like Dave said, it's like, okay, if you stretch in the middle of the day, it's almost like only eat out bad food. You're going to get tired. You're going to hit that 2 o'clock or 3 o'clock, mm-hmm. just grind, and you feel like you want to fall asleep. Because when you eat a lot of bad food, all the blood rushes to the stomach, and it kind of makes you tired because it's overworking. When you start to stretch, you get a sensory going off in your brain saying, oh, it's time to rest. He's lengthening his muscle tissue. He's tearing the tissue. Let's go ahead and send him lactic acid into that tissue to help recover the muscle. And he can deregulate. He's not going to be using it anymore.
Yeah.
It's like when I tell guys before they go run or before they go do some powerful competition, don't stretch. Don't hold your stretch. Do dynamic warm-up, which would be like butt kickers and high knees and karaoke and power lunges and stuff like that. It's warming the muscle up to move very quickly. It doesn't hold it where you feel that tension pull and you get that recovery sensory to fire. It's basically warming up the tissue and say, okay, we can do this. We can lengthen to produce power.
Yeah.
And that's the idea.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if you feel energized, I mean, maybe some people in there, they're saying, well, I do feel energized after stretching at midday. You know why you probably feel energized? Because you got up and you moved around.
That's probably right. I mean, how often do you sit down and all of a sudden you start dozing off?
Right. So get up, take a quick walk, walk to the cafeteria, get some water, get some cold water. That'll wake you up. That'll give you energy.
Go outside for a second.
Yeah.
Get some sun.
Mm-hmm.
That stuff will wake you up. Sitting down in a rested position is going to make you tired. Stretching is not really going to help.
No.
But getting up, moving, doing a few squats, kind of open up those hips a bit.
Test your hips. Test your knees.
And nothing feels better. Like when I wake up in the morning, I go ahead and do my deep squat. And I sit there for a couple minutes. Nothing feels better.
Yeah. I was doing that this morning, actually.
Yeah. It opens up the hips. It opens up the ankles.
Again, just kind of hang out there for a minute.
Yeah. And again, I'm not perfect at it. I don't sleep the best every once in a while. I'll toss and turn, or, you know, noises will wake me up. And I'm not a very deep sleeper, so if the dog might wake me up, or I'll crinking outside. You know, it doesn't matter. I'll wake up and I'll have trouble going back to sleep. So what happens is my body is kind of going through a crazy cycle at night. I wake up, I may be stiff. I go ahead and do my squat, walk around a little bit. I'm wide as rain. I'm ready to conquer the world.
Yeah.
It's just things like that. If I didn't get up and test my mobility every day, I'd be hurt. I mean, there's no way I'd be able to meet these standards. And you guys are looking at me like, what are you doing? You're walking like you just got shot.
Yeah.
And you're trying to tell me to do this?
Mm-hmm.
Nope, not happening today.
Yeah, and we're not saying, like, if you follow the daily hacks, everything will be perfect. You're going to sleep perfectly. You're never going to have pain. What will happen is that your quality will be increased and your pain will be decrease.
And that's kind of what we shoot for, right?
Yes.
Try to live with reduced pain or without pain.
So if you're one of those people that go stretch during your work day, watch our videos, listen to the podcast, come ask me.
We won't tell you you're wrong. We just won't tell you you're right.
Yeah. I can guarantee I can find something better.
And that's the thing is, we're here to educate, to find, to make you guys realize that it's not the magazine. The magazine's not always right. Okay, there's a lot more towards the fitness industry. And again, we could be wrong. We're probably not. But,
but I mean, and that goes on, like, as far as, like, really go back to the whole invest in yourself, educate yourself. If someone is telling you to stretch midday, ask them why. Challenge them. I'm telling you to do something, if Mike's telling you to do something, ask why. See if we can hold our own.
There
Bring up counterpoints.
There should be a reason.
Should be able to explain every single movement. Mike is able to explain every single movement he has me do during the day.
Well, that's the first thing I said is ask questions. If you don't know why you're doing something, ask why.
Same thing.
You need to know because you need to have that investment.
Yeah, and when you go to the doctor, you should be asking questions. You go to the dentist, ask questions. Too many people sit there and just absorb what someone else says, take it to heart, and they don't know the context, or they don't know how to apply it in a different scenario. That's why you ask questions. Don't be afraid to ask questions.
Good example, like the dentist. If the dentist says you need to rinse with this twice a day, this liquid, and you're like, okay, you just hate me.
And someone else goes, why do you rinse with that twice a day?
And you're like, I don't know, the dentist told me. So you may not be really on top of it. You may forget a few days here, you may forget a few days there. Because the dentist told me to do it. I'll do it when I can. But if you go in there and the dentist says, rinse with this twice a day, and you're asked, well, why, doc? He says, oh, if you don't, you're going to lose all your teeth. You'll make sure you rinse that. You're going to be doing that twice a day.
Can I do it more?
Yeah. So that's the thing is, if you know why you're doing something, you'll be more invested to stick on top of it. If I tell someone, give me 100 squats a day, every day, so I need 700 a week, and they're like, okay, I'll do that. But they don't know why I want them to do that.
They just look at it as 100 squats a day.
They don't
know the short-term or the long-term benefits.
They may do it, they may not.
But if you explain.
And if they say, well, why am I doing 100 squats a day, coach? Well, it's because we need an increase in mobility in your ankle, your knees, and your hips, and your squat's not very good. So with doing your squat's going to actually increase your form, your abdomen strength, and your mobility in your hip, knees, and joint, and your ankles. Oh, that's what I want to work on. I'm going to do that.
Awesome. And then they can actually track their progress.
Mm-hmm.
And then go, well, he said it's going to help me with this, this, this. Oh, my gosh, it's helping me with this, this, and this. He was right.
And that's why you need to ask those questions why am I doing this? Why am I stretching my ankles? Why am I stretching my wrists? What's going to help with my wrists? And everybody tells me, oh, stretch your wrists. It's going to help. What's it going to help? Well, it's going to increase your joint mobility. No, it won't. If someone says, and I always tell people that have wrist issues, I say, get a stress ball. Squeeze it. You know, squeeze it about 20 minutes, a half hour a day. Or get a newspaper, open it up, stick your hand in the middle, and just sprinkle the paper together. Or get a rice bucket and then work it around to build up the structure in the wrist. And they're like, well, why is that important? That will help against carpal tunnel because it's going to build up the stability and the strength of the wrist and allow the muscles to work more efficiently without putting impingement on that carpal tunnel ligament and nerve. And they're like, oh, really? Yes. So they do it, and then a week later, it's like, wow, my wrist doesn't hurt as much anymore. Well, that's why. If I just said, stick your hand in the rice bucket, spin it around, squeeze a little stress ball, and crumple up some newspaper, they'll be like, okay, I'll do it every once in a while. But if I don't see a benefit, I don't see why I'm doing it, why am I going to do it? What's the point? And I know this is kind of way off the topic we're talking about, but the idea is don't be afraid to ask questions on why. You know, why am I doing X, Y, Z?
Same thing. I mean, it still applies to like the dogmas and the fallacies, because look at how many magazines. They're like, hey, these are the 10 best exercises for you.
Why?
And then they explain what the exercises are, but they really don't go in because they got a page, two-page spread that they have to put all these exercises in, so they don't take the time to explain why.
Mm-hmm.
So then you just look at, oh, well, these 10 exercises are good for me. What is good for you?
Yeah.
Something that may be good for person A may not be good for person B.
Exactly.
Why are you doing these movements? Why are you doing some variation of a squat when you can't even do a basic squat correctly?
Mm-hmm. I mean, you're absolutely right. And we see it all the time. And magazines, I think, their job is to sell a product.
Yeah, catchy headline.
So if I wrote a magazine article saying the toughest exercises you should be doing, people would be like, the toughest exercise I should be doing.
Mm-hmm.
But if I wrote a title saying the easiest exercises you should be doing, you're like, sweet, I can do that.
Five easy exercises you never knew existed that's going to get you washboard abs.
Yes, it's all about the tagline. If you read that, you're like, wow. But if I had a real tagline saying the toughest exercise you've never done that won't get you washboard abs, because that's going to come from your diet, but this will help you move better, which may make you seem thinner, but it won't, because it probably would increase your weight, because it's going to build more structure and muscle definition. So, let's get to it.
My editor is going to shoot that one down.
Right.
That isn't going to sell magazines. That isn't going to get people. That's not clickbait. That's not going to get people coming to the site, buying the magazine. Nothing.
Because, I mean, how often do you read a men's fitness or a Shape magazine or a women's fitness, and every month it's always the 10 best exercises.
Right.
The 10 best exercises for my legs.
You just told me 10 best exercises last month.
But these
and
are
now you
exactly.
have these new 10 best exercises?
Yeah.
Man, fitness industry is moving quick.
Exactly. I mean, if you just go back, like every other few months you look at a magazine, everyone, like the men's fitness, will always have the best ab workout. And it's like every summer. And it's
every
a few
summer.
Different exercises.
Yeah, they just...
They recycle.
Just a little bit. But yeah, every summer it's always the same. Washboard abs.
And their diets are kind of just a play. Like, oh, eat this. It's chicken and rice with some, you know, lemon sprout or some puree.
Yeah.
Yum.
Did you know about spinach and kale?
Yeah,
oh, my God.
Kale's the new thing.
Kale is the new thing.
It's like, come on. We all know if you want to have washboard abs or six-pack, it's not something that's going to come overnight. It takes a lot of hard work. But focusing on that is not going to get you there. Our idea is let's work on the entire picture. Let's make sure we're doing everything the right way. And our outcome, our end result will be definition and our shoulders and our back and our arms and our legs and, yes, and our abdomen. That's what's going to happen with just doing things the right way.
Yeah. More importantly, you're going to feel good. You're going to move well.
You're going to feel good in your way.
That's the goal.
And there's no magic pill. There's no magic workout. There's no magic exercise that's going to help. It's doing a lot of movement many, many times, over and over again. And one trainer said it the best, or one strength coach said it the best. You pick stuff up, you put it down. Then you pick something else up a little heavier, then you put it back down. That's kind of all working out is lifting heavy things up and putting it down. Now, going to look deeper detail, it's lifting things up with correct form and putting it back down and doing it over and over and over again. So then when I go pick something up that's not as heavy, I can do it without getting hurt.
Yeah.
Good example. I deadlift 400 pounds. Now I'm going to go lift up a 200-pound stove. I should be able to do that pretty easily.
Yeah.
It's half my deadlift.
I'm going to go help my friend move. I look like a superstar.
Yes. They're all struggling. You're like, guys, what are you all struggling about? Because essentially what you're doing is in the gym, you pick stuff up and put it down. Outside of the gym, you pick stuff up and put it down. It's just not as heavy.
How often do you pick stuff up? You're always picking stuff up.
You're always picking stuff up and putting it down. So, example, why do we work out? What is the main reason we work out or train? To be better, to look better, to feel better, to move better, all these little things. And I said, yeah, okay, that's great. You wanna look good, you wanna feel good, good. Now, bottom line is the reason we work out is to live longer, and so when we do things outside, activities, leisurely things, it doesn't hurt and we can do it more.
Yeah.
Bottom line, athletes don't work out because they want to look good. Athletes work out so they can perform their craft better.
You work out because
bottom line.
You want to perform better outside of that, or you just want to move better.
Mm-hmm. So if you wake up every day and say, you know what, I don't care if I don't move well, I don't care if I don't do anything leisurely well, I don't care, I want to be lazy, I don't want to do anything, I want to be the bare minimum of my entire life. If that's who you want to be, that's okay. You're allowed to be that way.
Go for it.
Just don't go to the gym and expect to get better. I mean, that's just the truth. Just don't go to the gym. Don't listen to this. If you feel that way, just go ahead and delete this now. But if you want your life to be better and more efficient and more effective, then that's why you come to the gym and push yourself to that limit. I'm asking for a few hours a week to give me everything you have. So the other 168 hours a week, you can do it very easily, very efficiently.
Yeah, your quality of life is going to be so much better. Oh man, I'm going to go to a wedding. I can dance twice as long because I just feel good. Mm-hmm. I feel good about myself. I'm moving well. My endurance is there. Get all kinds of phone numbers.
Oh yeah. And then say you want to go on a long walk. Say the wedding's on the beach.
Yeah.
And you see one of the nice little bridesmaids. And
what's up?
Yeah. And she goes, let's go for a walk on the beach. You're like,
yeah. Walking on sand is tough. Good thing I've been working out.
Yes.
Easy for me.
Yeah. So you go, oh, the pier's 2 miles away. I'm good.
Oh, you're tired? I'll carry you.
Because she weighs 120 pounds, you deadlift 400.
Exactly.
Easy.
Move. We just helped you meet your soulmate.
And that's it. That's working out. You pick stuff up, put it down, and then you can go hit with a hot bridesmaid and carry her.
You can pick
her
up.
You can pick her up and then eventually put her down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, don't carry forever.
No. Well, hopefully she'd like you to put her down.
Yeah. We won't get into that. That's like a relationship podcast, and I'm not comfortable.
No. But and again, we could go on hours and hours with the dogmas, but the main ones we wanted to cover today was not every certification is worth its weight in gold. Not every coach or trainer is worth their weight in gold. Ask questions. Crunches are not as good as you think they are. So I'm not just taking crunches, but I'm taking the whole idea is if it looks stupid standing up, or if it doesn't look right in a lay down position or standing position, and it doesn't look right standing up, it probably wouldn't happen.
Yeah. If you're not using it every day, then if you're not using it in your daily life, why are you doing it right here?
Mm-hmm. And people would say, what about squats? I'm a squatter every day. Well, yeah, you do. But I don't squat with 300 pounds on my back. Well, I understand that. And it goes back to the whole concept.
If you can squat with 300 pounds on your back, you can squat with 0 pounds on your back. So much easier.
Yes. And that's all you do. You pick stuff up.
Everybody squats. Mm-hmm. Every day.
And they talk about, what about cleans, man? What about cleans, Dave? Well, how often do you raise your arm up? It's a clean position. You pick something up, stuff like that. And we can nitpick all day long. But the idea of it is, if it looks stupid standing, it's not a good exercise. So if we do crunches on the ground, which looks like we're
catching a cannonball standing up.
Cannonball. Or the bugarillo.
Yeah, yeah.
If we look at the bugarillo, then it's not small. And then we can go really, really in depth. And we want to kind of touch on like machines, how we sit all day, which we're going to kind of wait for that because I want some other people's opinions, because some people love the machines, and kind of hopefully we can kind of divert them into our thing a little bit.
Convert them.
Because again, we sit all day, let's go to the gym, and sit more, yay!
Yeah, let me get on an elliptical and watch 3 hours of TV.
The elliptical, I wish I could take a sledgehammer to every single elliptical I see. I think it's a waste of time. If you want to waste an hour of your life, and feel like you're doing something, go ahead and go to an elliptical. But it'd be better just to go walk outside for an hour. And the reason is, when you raise your foot and hit that ground, we hit this thing called the deep longitudinal system, which is part of our sling systems that actually help with stability, balance, and coordination of the human body. If you do not step and do not hit your foot to the ground, we are missing some of that mobility, that function, the whole apparatus of how the body's supposed to work. Elliptical really isn't doing that. Now, if you want to go on an elliptical and kill it, like do a mile under 4 minutes, okay, I can see that.
Yeah, if you're timing yourself.
And you want to kill it, but don't just sit on for an hour and go. If you're just going to be on something for an hour just to kind of sweat, get on a treadmill or go walk.
Row machine.
Whew. Row machine for an hour.
Someone else, a better man, woman than I will be doing that.
Yeah, those.
They're like 12 minutes for an hour.
That sucks.
Yeah, so and we'll, with the machines, it'd probably be a good one to take more videos and really show you,
yeah.
You know, what movements they're taking away from you by using the machine.
That might be a video podcast. We may do that when we get our camera set up. We could do the whole thing in a video and just link the audio of the podcast. And then the fourth dogma we tackle today is stretching.
It has its place and it has its purpose, but most people are using it incorrectly.
Exactly. And that's the shame. I mean, and a lot of it is people read and they think, oh, this is the correct thing to do. This is how we're supposed to do it because I read it in this magazine or I read it from this book or so on and so forth. But that's the problem we all get caught in is we don't want to do our own research for ourselves. We just accept what's black and white and we accept from what the preacher says down to us.
Someone who wrote that book may have something entirely different in mind when they're thinking of application versus theory.
Well, let's look at selling a product. Okay. If Dave, if you're selling me a product, and the product is a great product, but you know it's not an easy thing to achieve, okay? Say you're selling a widget, right? That's the good old make-believe product. But this widget is not going to make your life any better, but it will if you put the time, the effort, the whatever into it. First, you have to get it, and it takes you 7 hours to build it. It takes another 7 hours to build the structural software of it, then another 7 hours. So basically, it takes you so many hours to get it working. And when it gets working, it's going to take 6 months to make you feel better or to make your life easier. Okay? That's going to be a hard product to sell.
Yeah, am I going to mention any of that?
No.
I'm trying to sell it?
But that's the truth behind a product.
Yes.
But if I'm selling a product and I say, our workout today, okay, we'll talk about our workout. It wasn't easy. It was quick, okay? But it wasn't easy.
Right.
If I gave the real definition of a workout today, it is a workout that's going to destroy your upper body, your lower body, and your heart. In other words, your cardiovascular system. It'll be done in about 30 minutes, but it's going to destroy your system. It's going to push you to the limit. It's going to get you out of that comfort zone. It's going to push you past that area of wanting to die and throw up. But when you're done, you're going to feel better. You're going to assume that everything is life because you just conquered something that was almost impossible to do.
And how do you sell it, though?
You say, hey, quick workout in 30 minutes.
This is a quick workout. It takes 30 minutes. No weights. You don't even have to lift any weights. Oh, my gosh. That sounds amazing.
Yeah, and that you're absolutely right, and that people want to buy into that. Like, oh, that's it, 30 minutes, and I'm gonna feel great. That's not really the truth.
You will feel great,
but
it's probably not the same that you have in your head.
Right, because the idea of it is my programs aren't made. If they're quick, it's because the movement patterns are one after the other, and we're just go. There's no such thing as doing a 30-minute workout that. Does not want to make you feel like you're going to die is going to make you better. I'm sorry. It's not going to happen. If I do deadlift for 30 minutes, okay, that's great and all, but am I really pushing myself? But if I do deadlift for, say, 20 minutes and then, or say 25 minutes, I do deadlift for 25 minutes and then do a biathlon 5x5, okay, I'm going to be hurting.
Yeah.
Because not only did I just destroy my entire structure of doing a deadlift, now I'm going to do something that's going to destroy my entire structure of the same movement patterns and the same muscular structure, but faster.
Yes.
That's a program. Mm-hmm. Okay? And I always tell guys, they always ask me, why do I do so much sprinting and so much cardio? And I don't really call it cardio. I call it suffering. The nicest way of saying it. It's we use a rower, we use the curve, and we do that to push us out of that comfort zone.
Yeah,
we don't always use it. We've done things where we've done a 5-minute plank or 300-second plank, and we've done med ball slams real quick. And stuff like that, that still makes us want to feel like we're going to die. But the idea is it's getting us out of that comfort zone and making us a better human.
Yeah, you I've picked up on it as you've gone through the weeks with me, where the movements are all really tough in the first half, and you're really breaking down the muscles. And then that same timed movement or timed exercise, whatever it's going to be, it's using those same muscles, and you're just asking me to do it in a specific amount of time.
Mm-hmm.
And that it's good. I love it. And as far as like program design, I know absolutely nothing about that, but I'd say that's.
Which we'll do a seminar or a podcast on program design, how we come up with these certain things.
Yeah.
But the idea is like,
I'd be really interested in that.
Oh, like today, we did the row was at our end result, which we did a 2,500 meter split row, which means we've done 2,500 meters of row, but it was split into four little segments. But before that, we did a bunch of push-ups, a bunch of pull-ups.
Tricep dips,
med ball slams, and air squats. So we did a lot of things that kind of primed the body, which in other words, fatigued the body. Then we say, hey, let's go row. So the only thing we really did not attack was the back, but everything else was trashed.
Mm-hmm.
So the row was even harder because he didn't have a lot of strength through the legs to push, so it made him use his upper body, which killed him. And that was the idea of the workout today. So that's kind of our dogmas. I guess maybe we should call this the dogmas of the month, but we should come back to this every month, kind of give people interesting. So if there's any sort of things you want to have input or comment about, or if you would like us to research a certain dogma or fallacy of the fitness industry, let us know. We'll attack it because we have a laundry list of things we want to get. And today we only got through four.
Yeah. If you think we're wrong, too, I want to hear your opinion.
I won't agree with it, but I'll hear it.
Yeah.
No, we're just joking.
Talk against it. Talk on it as well.
Yes. And again, this is our opinion. This is what we teach. And again, a lot of people won't agree with us. And a lot of people haven't agreed with what I believe in. And that's fine. They're allowed. I don't have any disregard. I don't have any hatred towards them. It's just, I believe this is the best way to get the best out of a human. And I don't look at them as, I'm going to make you squat X, I'm going to make you deadlift this, I'm going to make you run that. I look at it as, I'm going to make you move better as a human being. You're an animal. We're all animals. We need to move like animals. We're the animals at the top of the food chain, but we move like we should be all eaten by everybody.
Yeah.
And it's a shame. So if you have any questions, please leave comments. And we're going to post a few things in the show notes, like the perfect push-up and the plank. So people understand the difference between what we mean a plank, which is good core exercises, to the crunches, which is the back.
Mm-hmm.
So, anything you want to add or end with?
Nothing. I think we covered enough. I got to rant a little bit. Always love ranting.
Rants are great.
But just end with that saying, make sure you invest in yourself. Educate yourself.
Any pointless tips or knowledge we need to know, like the lion?
Oh, like a random thing?
A random fact.
Bumblebees have tongues.
All right, on that, here we go.